from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour goes back as far as humans have lived in communities together. We're talking about daycare this hour, or helping care for our children. Daycare appeared in France, for example, around 1840, and the Société de Crèche was recognized by the French government in 1869. The first daycare established in the United States by private charity was the New York Day Nursery, opened in 1854. But by 1900, American childcare remained only loosely organized among community groups, private help, and the government. And so it has slowly changed, but here we are in 2015, and here's the headline that landed in my inbox yesterday. Quote, families in Monroe County receiving child care subsidies grow poorer. If you're making anything close to minimum wage and you have a child in daycare, most of your income's gone before you can start thinking of other things like food, medicine, housing. Imagine single parents, families trying to escape poverty. This hour, let's talk about childcare, daycare, resources, and what we should do next. I would love to hear from you about this. You can call the program. It's 844-295-TALK. Toll free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. And my guests for the hour include Erica Rosenberg, a principal with the Center for Governmental Research. Erica, nice to have you back.
Thank you.
Larry Marks is here, Executive Director of the Children's Agenda. Larry, thank you.
Thanks, Evan.
Catherine Smith with the League of Women Voters of the Rochester metro area, and a subject that she has been passionate about for a long time now. Catherine, nice to have you.
Thank you.
And here as well is Amanda Gage, a parent with how many kids in daycare now?
Three children.
Yes. 10, 5, and 2?
Yes.
How are you and how are they?
We're both great.
Everybody's good. We're going to talk about Amanda's experience because I think Amanda's experience is some that many of our listeners will be able to relate to. Let me start with Erica, though. That headline grabs your attention. Mm-hmm. Families in Monroe County receiving child care subsidies grow poorer. The hope would be if you're receiving subsidy that slowly you work your way out of poverty, you get out of poverty, you create a better situation for yourself and your children. What's going on?
We're not sure, so let me be honest about that. The data that we updated our report with was some data that we had to pay the state to produce for us. So what we've been trying to do in collaboration with the League of Women Voters over the last year, really, or even a little bit longer, is sort of track the big picture trends, both locally and statewide, with the child care subsidy program. And not to whine too much on the radio, but it's been really extraordinarily difficult because there's just not a very good system that allows for much sort of aggregating an analysis of this data. So anyway, the data we were just able to get from the state, and we did have to pay the state for it so that the workers could get it out of their system, was trying to look at the population that's receiving subsidies and break them down a couple of different ways. So look at their incomes, look at what they're paying for a copay, and look at the settings that they're choosing for their children and how those things are changing. And what we sort of see is that the trends are a little bit all over the place. But here in Monroe County, from 2011 to 2013, we did see the families receiving subsidies. There was growth among the lowest income of those. So in 2011, we had 826 families that were at the poverty level or below and receiving subsidies. And then by 2013, that number had gone up to 986, so a 19% increase. And then at the higher income levels, we didn't see as much of an increase. And in fact, the highest category that we were tracking, if you're making 150% of poverty or above, there was actually a decrease in the number of families at that level. So we're not exactly sure why. It's not really a long-term trend. It's just looking at what's happening over those 3 years. But we can say that the families are still receiving subsidies, but that they seem to be sort of concentrated in this very low-income group.
Okay. And again, I will do my best as a host not to try to draw the sweeping conclusions that you want me to avoid, but I think that there is at least the data is interesting enough to at least look at that and say, shouldn't we hope that there are fewer families in poverty? That if you are a family receiving subsidies, you're working your way out of that as opposed to staying there and then seeing more added to that number.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's absolutely the goal, right? The subsidy program is about helping low-income families to keep jobs and to have quality child care for their children. The problem is if folks are working in jobs that they where they're not seeing increases that allow them to kind of advance up the income ladder, then, and I think that's often the case, then we're just not going to see that type of improvement. We're going to be kind of sustaining families at this basic level and helping their kids stay in some kind of stable child care, which I think is really important. But we're not, at least as far as this data show us, seeing the kind of trends that we would hope for.
Okay. And so when we talk about wage disparity, this is a good example of again, not to speak too broadly, but we've talked about the fact that, sure, the Dow's been doing well. Unemployment, based on a number of metrics, is at least better than it was a few years ago. But the disparity in wages persists, and it looks like people at the bottom of the wage scale, that stagnation seems to be reflected in studies like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think we see that in almost all the studies that we look at on wages and income, right, is that the kind of gap there and it just across the board in our country seems to be growing. So, absolutely. Mm.
Larry Marks, what does this say to you?
Well, let me first say what it doesn't say to me, which is it shows that the overall population receiving child care subsidies, the number of that population that are in lower income, deeper poverty mm-hmm. states is increasing. But it doesn't say that one family taking child care subsidies from year to year is worse off as they are receiving child care subsidies. So that's an important distinction to draw, because all the evidence does show that child care subsidies do help lift people to a certain level of economic stability mm-hmm. and do help people. It's not the silver bullet to poverty, but it's definitely part of the answer to making work pay and allowing people to support themselves and improve their livelihoods through the workplace.
Okay. Catherine Smith, what did you draw from this data?
Unfortunately, it confirmed what we had seen in our report that was done last year. Mm-hmm. We wanted the state data in the format that Erica described to confirm what we thought was the trend. And we're also concerned that maybe, unfortunately, this trend is going to continue for a while in our community. That's why the League is engaged in this. We want to have the community talk about how we could use the money we have, possibly in different ways, to maximize the stable child care providers in our community, which we do have. That's actually not an issue here. We have terrific child care providers, but we need to be using our resources very wisely because we don't see this improving anytime in the immediate future.
Okay. Amanda Gage is a mom with kids who are 10, 5, and 2. What is the impact of caring for those three children for you? What's it like for your family?
It's a great impact. I mean, it's helped me tremendously. My journey began in November of 2013. I applied, and it took several weeks to get a letter in the mail. I was denied due to the lack of funding. You know, I was denied three times. On the fourth,
For help.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. All because of the lack of funding. It took about 7 months until I was finally approved. It pretty much came down to, was I going to keep my children in daycare or was I not? Because I couldn't afford it. It was a financial burden on us. It came down to putting food on the table or paying our rent. It was very difficult. If I didn't have the assistance, I don't know where I would be. I probably wouldn't have a job. I probably wouldn't have a house for my children. It's great impact on us.
Okay. When you finally did get approval, mm-hmm. again, how long did it take you to get approval?
It took about 7 months.
What was that like for you?
Oh, very difficult. Like I said, it was a huge burden on us financially. But when we did get approved, I mean, I do have a parent fee I pay weekly. Mm-hmm. So it's not something that, you know, it's
totally
just given to me.
Right. Yeah, Erica, you use the term copay. Is that what you're talking about?
Correct.
Here?
Okay. Yep. Family share, copayment.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, I pay a fee weekly.
Okay, but when you finally got that approval after 7 months,
yes.
Give me a sense for the relief that is like for your family.
Oh, well, it helped dramatically. You know, I mean, there are times that are still stressful because, you know, I am limited income. You know, if I miss a day of work or, you know, if the kids are sick, I can't bring them. But, I mean, it did help me, you know, knowing, oh, I can put food on the table this week, or I know that my rent's going to be paid on time. I don't have to worry, you know, about it being late.
Okay. Well, Larry Marks, I know the Children's Agenda focuses every year on what is the state doing, what are the resources available, what kind of child care subsidies are we seeing, perhaps at the county level, et cetera. So let's start by looking at possible conclusions or ways forward now. What do you getting out of this year's budget? What do you want to see happen next year? What resources need to be available that aren't currently?
Well, there's clearly not enough money in the system. And even though the county is now accepting applications and has been since the summer, Amanda's experience is the experience of thousands of people who often get discouraged and don't reapply because it's so frustrating to learn you're not accepted. And there isn't enough money. We estimate at least 55% of those who would take childcare if it was available to them and are eligible for it are not able to access it. That's thousands of people that Amanda's speaking for. So for the last 5 years, the state funding has gone up or down, but has averaged a 5.8% increase. For the last 5 years, the money that the county solely controls at its own discretion has gone up or down, but overall has been down 24% over that same time period.
Do those wash out? Does that kind of cancel out?
Well, what washes out is low-income working families who aren't able to receive it. So we've lost 7,200 slots for low-income kids in Monroe County over the last 12 years or so.
Okay, to be clear on that, if that money was available, we do have daycare availability that we could fill it, yes?
Sure. There's centers. They'd need to grow, but money is the answer to that, right? They'd need to take on more staff. They'd need to expand. But there just is not enough money in the system. And I want to emphasize that's a shared responsibility. Sometimes units of government act like, you know, recently divorced parents, I think, where they point fingers.
On this, absolutely. In fact, and again, I don't want to make this a political discussion, but we heard, for example, in December when Monroe County was budgeting and Democrats came on this program and told us they were upset about child care subsidies. And Republicans said, talk to the state. You know, that's really where this fight is. And it did have that sense of his fault versus her fault.
And the truth is all of the above. It's everybody's fault and everybody's responsibility. It's the federal government, it's the state government, and it's the county. And they all have to pony up when it comes to our kids. We all have to shoulder the responsibility and stop pointing fingers. So there are other communities who've done some innovative things on finances at a county level. There's other states that have done innovative things at a state level to pump more resources into the system. And that's what's required.
I just wanted to jump in for a second on the funding, again, just to inject a little bit of data. So we look at it on an inflation-adjusted basis, and we studied it over the 8 years between, like, 2007 and 2014. And the state allocation of federal and state money to Monroe County really went up a lot in 2009 and 10 because of the stimulus funding that was coming down from the federal government. We were trying to stimulate the economy to get out of the recession. So we did have a big increase in funding in that year, and it really lasted for 2 years. So we're talking about $38 million, again, inflation adjusted, but coming into the county to help pay for child care subsidies. That's now down in the most recent year to less than $36 million. So if you look over that time frame I mentioned, 8 years, we're really kind of not even keeping up with inflation. There's a decrease of 2% over that time frame. And the county funding, the local funding that is provided for this program, really kind of the same story. We start in 2007 with an inflation-adjusted amount of spending at about $6 million. And then in 2014, we're level with that. So, you know, the demand is, we know, growing, and the supply of available dollars really isn't.
But there will be some, inevitably some, of our listening audience who are averse to any sort of expansion in government subsidy. They feel like we're already in difficult times to begin with. And so Larry Marks, they hear you say, well, we need at all levels to step up. And they'll say, how do you justify that investment?
Well, you justify that because families like Amanda are in the workplace doing the right thing. They're not trading off, sacrificing what's right by their children for their employer. They're not sacrificing what's right for their employer to improve their livelihoods. They're doing the both and that's what we should be supporting. These are not primarily, we're talking about low-income working families. It's that program which has taken the biggest hit in funding and loss of slots. Not talking about people on welfare who are able to get child care when you're a TANF recipient.
Low-income working families.
So what I would say to those folks who say, hey, we've had it, we can't spend more, is this is increasing our tax revenue. For every dollar spent on child care, you get 1.9 back in the economy. There are 7,500 jobs locally, we estimate, in the early child care sector. It's a $210 million Monroe County industry we're talking about supporting. And I would say that the benefits are not only to families escaping poverty, but the benefits are to the kids' long-term future educational and health success.
Catherine Smith, what do you think?
Absolutely. And I think the other thing is when I hear politicians, and I know we don't want to make this hour about the politics of getting the money, but I do think a very large factor is how people see the word family. And when I hear people say that we shouldn't be subsidizing, we shouldn't be spending our tax dollars from the federal or the state or the county level, and they're talking about families, I think maybe they're talking about the families of the 1950s. And I think that we need to recognize who our families are. And they're wonderful, but they're not the structure that we had in 1950. And it makes for us to deliver services for all the people in our county different than we did it 50 years ago.
You're hearing Catherine Smith with the League of Women Voters of Rochester and Monroe County metro area. Also in studio is Erica Rosenberg, a principal with the Center for Governmental Research. Amanda Gage is a parent with three children, 10, 5, and 2, talking about her own experience with the system. And Larry Marks is the executive director of the Children's Agenda. Let me get to the first phone call here, and it's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. This is David in Pittsford. Go ahead, David.
Thanks for taking my call. You listed all these different governments that could possibly be subsidizing, I mean, the county, the state, the feds, and so on. And these are all worth discussing and arguing about and so on, but the one you didn't mention was the family. What if the people in the family earned enough money to pay for daycare? What if the wages were high enough so they could earn enough? What if we had a minimum wage that was suitable for their paying their own daycare? So I'd like to hear what you have to say about that.
David, thank you for the call. And Larry Marks, you want to start? Go ahead.
Sure. David, that's exactly right. One of the things to understand first about the low-income subsidy program for working families is, as Amanda said, it does require a family share, a copay. So they have skin in the game. It's not free. It's not a hand out. It's a hand up. But I know when it came to our own child care expenses, I have a 13-year-old and 11-year-old daughters, and our income just shot up enormously now that we no longer have to pay our child care fees. We were able to shoulder that ourselves, and that's fantastic because we make a living wage. Not enough people are able to do that, so we need to both provide funding for the, on average, it costs $12,000 in our region, more than public universities' tuition to have kids in high-quality early care.
All right, hold on. Let's hit that point again. $12,000 plus annually
for one child. That's for a baby in a center, but yes.
In daycare.
Yeah, I wanted to kind of get to that point, too, that it is just enormously expensive. And the truth is, a lot of middle-class families have trouble paying for child care. And we did a similar version of this study on Long Island, and they actually wanted us to look at the need for help with child care going up to 400% of poverty, because there are so many people who make way beyond the poverty level but still have a really hard time affording child care. So, yeah, if you the point's absolutely well taken. If you have more than one child and you're making minimum wage or even a little bit better
close
than
to
that,
minimum wage, yeah,
there is no way that you're going to be able to afford child care. It's just a completely unaffordable proposition. It literally would eat every dollar you made just to pay for child care on its own.
Yeah, again, if you're making minimum wage in the state, still $8.75, going up to $9 at the end of the year, which is, help me with the math here, $16,000 to $17,000 a year, is that right? If you're working 40 hours a week, is some
$16,800.
So roughly 75% of your income would be eaten up by having one child.
One child, that's right.
In daycare.
Right.
on average. If you have two children, it's entirely gone. And,
right. And more than gone, actually. In most cases, you can't even make it just with that. So, you know, think about having two parents and maybe the other person's wage can cover housing, food, clothing, everything else. But it doesn't seem very likely that that's a workable scenario, right?
Okay. And this is where, again, some of the audience will say, well, this has become a political thing. Now you just want to raise the minimum wage. You're using this as the stalking horse to get the minimum wage passed, et cetera. But what the panel appears to be saying is there is an impact for low-income families here that could tangibly see a change in what might be affordable or doable. Is that, it may disagree? No? Yeah. Catherine?
No, I agree with that completely. And again, I go back to the point about what we mean when we say family today. I think when I hear the conversation, I'm still hearing the mother working. There's not a lot of recognition of young men that would like to do paternity leave or be home with children because of the job market.
What there is this paternity leave that you speak of?
Well, what I'm saying is, in our community with, let's say, 40-year-old young men with college degrees, and they're laid off, which we've had, what, the last 10 years of happening, and they stay home with a young child, a 3- and a 4-year-old, and they discover, wow, this is wonderful. Mm-hmm. They don't know anything about it. Their father didn't do it. Their grandfather didn't do it. And there's a whole recognition about what it means to raise a family, to have children, what the relationships are between your partner or your significant other or your spouse. That's our community. I mean, we have to stop talking when we're discussing family of husband, wife, male role, female role. That's not how people right. live, but that's how our structure is, our school systems, how they get their money, our municipalities and our county and how they get their money. I mean, you know, New York State, I mean, our Constitution's older than the U.S. Constitution. And when we change things for state money and federal money coming in, we're talking about what happens in the Assembly and the Senate. We're talking about the same structure. That's not how we live in the 21st century, folks. We've been here for 15 years. We've got to get on.
Erica, you wanted to jump in there?
Oh, I was just going to say, what I hear Catherine doing, and I think is really valuable, is kind of placing this whole conversation about one program in the larger context of work-family balance problems, which I think a lot of people can relate to. And the way I think about it is just how much more difficult all those pressures become when you're trying to make ends meet on very low wage jobs. But I do think that's kind of the broader conversation is families are different today, needs are different, responsibilities are different, and it seems like mm-hmm. in a lot of ways our government structures, programs, and institutions haven't caught up, and it's not mm-hmm. easy to figure out how to make that happen. And I know Larry wants to talk mm-hmm. a little bit more about some of the creative financing options that are out there, because this is expensive. I mean, we're spending 40-some million dollars now in Monroe County to serve a lot more people. We'd have to spend a lot more money. County tax, county leaders don't want to raise taxes. State and federal leaders don't want to raise taxes. So it's a conundrum in a lot of ways.
Okay, well, I'm. Let's get a break in, and we're going to come back. Sean Marie in Geneva, Tim in Pittsford, we're coming to you guys on the phones to get your take as well. And if you want to weigh in, we'd love to know how daycare or childcare is impacting your family. And we're hearing a deluge of comments online. I will read some of those as well. A lot of very strong opinions on the cost of child and daycare as we talk about that, particularly the way it impacts the working poor, families trying to get out of poverty, et cetera. And our panel is talking about that. So short break. We even talk about paternity care, which is this odd thing. Maternity leave, paternity leave, how does that play in? It's all coming up next on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, we continue this conversation by broadening the scope to look at new anti-poverty efforts in the Rochester area. And we'll ask the question, how are they different than the efforts we've seen for the past 10 or 20 years? What's going on now that might actually work and alleviate poverty to get at the root causes? Join the conversation next hour on Connections.
So Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from Children's Institute with the ReCAP partnership, evaluating preschool programs across the Rochester community to support children as they begin their journey through school. Learn more at childrensinstitute.net.
Welcome back to Connections, and let's get to the phones. Sean Marie in Geneva, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to give a really great, a big thank you, honestly. Receiving subsidized child care allowed me to go back to college and get a degree and to be able to start my own business. If I had not received that subsidy, there's no way that I would have been able to afford my child care at that time. I was a single mom and had a little boy who was 2 and 3 at that time. So not only would I have not been able to get that degree, I wouldn't have been able to create my own business and then somehow manage to afford a $780 a month child care bill when I had my second child. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal, and that's a huge amount of money for me as a single parent to shoulder on my own. But all of that began when I received that subsidy when I was in college, and that was a big deal, and I'm very, very thankful for that.
Sean Marie, thank you for the call. $780 a month, Erica United, that's probably right in line with what we often hear.
Right. Yeah, fun. And I was just thinking what a great success story, and it illustrates exactly what Larry said, you know, that there are a lot of individual stories of really kind of triumph and overcoming difficulties with this little bit of a boost.
Okay. Tim in Pittsford. Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, I'm so jealous because what is his name? Larry? I'm sorry.
Larry Marks, yep.
His kids are 13 and 11 and out of daycare. My wife and I are going to throw a party the day that happens.
We are considered
the upper end of middle class, but the reason why we're not is because of daycare. We had, right now our oldest son is out. He has to do a wraparound program, which we still pay for, but when we had three kids in daycare, $36,000 a year out of our pocket. And that was a discount because we had multiple kids in daycare, 10% off because we had three kids in daycare. That at the end of the month, when $3,000 comes right out of your, it's just deflating. And, I mean, to go through that month after month, years, I mean, this is years and years and years of this. And you don't, it's not like we were at the top end of the daycares. I mean, it's a nice daycare, but really, if you shop around, the least we were going to pay was in the low 30s for daycare. So, you know, David calls and says, well, if they get paid more or a job, you know, a living wage, people are talking about $15 an hour, that's not going to cover it. That's not even going to be close. I mean, every year we're wondering, you know, is this really worth it? And it just barely works out every year where it is. And to look at your bank account at the end of the month and just think, you know, okay, this is great. We're doing this for the kids. I know it's helping them, but it is not just a change in lifestyle, but it pushes back things like retirement. Mm-hmm. Vacations are just about non-existent. And, you know, saving for big events is really, really tough. If something goes wrong at your house, guess where that money is? It's not there anymore. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars. That is, you don't ever want to say wasted because it's not wasted, but it's not there. It's gone, and it's a struggle.
Well,
sure.
Tim, here's an email from a listener, and I'll pose it to you because you're a dad of three kids, and I know you're dealing with so many parents like Amanda here, another parent of three on the panel. Jack writes to us, I don't mean to be impolite, but if you can't afford to care for children, you probably shouldn't have them. I know people hear that. Tim, you are a hardworking man. What do you say to people like Jack?
Yeah, that whoops, our fault. We accidentally had twins. it wasn't really intentional on our part. We just wanted to have kids to love and support, and we wanted, you know, we had one kid, and then we wanted to give him someone to play with, and two more showed up. So, yeah, our fault. Sorry.
I take the point, Tim. Stay on the line. Let's listen to the panel. And let me start with Larry. Tim is jealous of you, Larry, and I think everybody understands that. But what do you say to a father like Tim who's working, three kids, and you said $36,000 annually, Tim?
Yeah, but one more quick point, and our accountant let us know, it's our second accountant, said, well, we thought, well, you can write, the, or you know, put some of that towards your taxes or get some back at the end of the year. And they said, well, you make too much money for that. You can put $200 out of the $36,000 you paid. Basically, that's what you get back in your taxes. Isn't that a nice kick in the teeth?
Larry, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I just want to give a shout out to you, Tim, and to all the parents out there that I do think parenting is the hardest single job I have ever had in my life and probably ever will have. To do it well, to do it right, to really care for your kids is difficult given all the other incredible pressures that exist on modern families. So I think the entire workplace is designed, as Catherine was saying, more for the 50s family than it is for the 21st century family. And there's all kinds of things from paid family leave to child care subsidies to recognizing the need for flexibility to do parent-teacher conferences to care for sick kids or sick parents. All of that is increasingly has been ironed out of a highly productive workplace that's not very family-friendly. Mm-hmm. And we need to start doing what every other country pretty much in the world does, which is acknowledge that family structures are different. There's no longer single head of household income earners. It's two income earners usually per family. And we need to make accommodations in the workplace through public policy changes.
Erica Rosenberg.
Well, I just wanted to pipe in and say I can understand that person who emailed. You know, I mean, there certainly is that sentiment out there. You know, I paid for my kids. I took care of my kids. That's your responsibility as a parent. The only point I'd like to make is that, you know, once people have children, they're part of our community. And children who are not well cared for in the early years, children who are mired in kind of dysfunctional situations and poverty, those are chickens that sort of come home to roost on all of us in terms of, you know, their lost kind of learning potential, the problems they may have in school later on, the problems they may have later in life. I mean, there are social costs associated with all of those things that we all bear in the end. So, you know, not that I invalidate that perspective at all, but I just wanted to kind of add that. And I know it's a point everybody understands, but
okay. And Tim, last question for you. I'll let you go back to work. You're kind of a solutions kind of a guy. As a parent of three, what would you change? Give me an example of something that you would change as a parent of three if you could.
There is, in all honesty, my situation is what it is. We are, with all my complaining, we are fortunate enough that we can send our kids to daycare and still scrape by at the end of the month. But I think something needs to definitely be done for lower income families. And as a snide remark to the guy who emailed in and said, pay for your own kids,
yeah,
I can guarantee that there is money coming out of my paycheck this week that guy will need for some sort of service at some point in his life. This world is not black and white, and I am happy to help him out.
Well,
so thanks, Evan.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you for the phone call. And to his point there about, you know, he's not asking for a change in the system. He's saying he's doing the best he can. He accepts that situation. But the notion of maternity and paternity care has been brought up in this hour, and I think it has to be connected, isn't it? Is it not connected?
It is connected. At the state level, our governor and others have been talking about community schools. And when we have that large conversation about what that means, if the daycare, as we are speaking about it today, and the school systems were more connected, just the everyday little thing of taking your child to the daycare, and maybe the other child's program is somewhere else, and we have to pay for the buses or the parents' work schedule has to. I mean, when you do that day in, day out, and I'm giving one little example in the course of your day, it leads to stress. And it leads to people who have income that under normal circumstances, people would think, sure, you know, you could have two children and live a good life in Monroe County. But when you look at all of those things day in and day out, looking at your watch, holding your breath that the child isn't going to get the pink eye or that you're not going to come down with the virus that's in the community, it makes everything difficult, and we do see the consequences, yeah, and we do know the price. in our county, state, and federal budget, our tax dollars being spent on the consequences.
Amanda, as a mother of three, one of your children gets sick. Does it impact your work schedule? What's it like for you when there's a sick child in your household?
Well, I have to take the whole day off of work. For example, if they're running a fever, they have to be 24 hours fever-free before they can go to daycare. I mean, and you know, I'm short a day on my paycheck. I mean, yes, that it does. It's a burden when one of my children are sick. But, you know, that's my job. I'm here to take care of them.
No, I certainly wouldn't imply that you wouldn't. I'm just trying to get a look at a day-to-day, week-to-week impact. Absolutely. I think that's well said. And how many parents are out there, you know, like Amanda? Larry Marks, you looked it up. Paid maternity leave? United States doesn't have it.
Paid family leave. We're the company we keep in the United States in the world is Swaziland, Papua New Guinea, and Lesotho are the only three other countries besides the United States of America which have no paid family leave insurance laws. And there is an opportunity right now. Rhode Island, California, New Jersey have passed paid family leave insurance, and in the legislature right now, call your state senators, there's an opportunity to vote on paid family leave. Only 11% of private sector U.S. workers have any access to paid family leave. And that's whether leaving work to bond with a brand new child or taking care of an elderly parent, which increasingly many of us do as well. So it's very important workplace accommodation for families.
All right. I would love to hear from listeners on paid family leave. Is there anybody who opposes, and I don't mean that flippantly. I mean, because I think we should have a separate discussion on a different day in this program about the policy implications of that, because it has to cost something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't claim to know all the details there, but any listeners who would have an issue with that, or maybe you think it's about time, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Now, you mentioned what other states are already doing this?
It's California, New Jersey, and Rhode Island. And by the way they pay for it, it's genius. It's insurance. So in New York State, it would build off of the temporary disability deductions in work in people's paychecks. So it'd be 45 cents a week out of your paycheck that's there for when you need it. So it's a funding mechanism that pays for itself.
45 cents a week.
Yeah.
Wow. Amanda, that was Amanda you just heard say, wow, as the working mom. You up for that? Would you give up 45 cents a week?
Most definitely.
and you know, again, I haven't dug into the details. I'm trusting Larry's account of this, but if you can structure a system like that, it's hard to think of why you wouldn't do it. So what's the status in New York State, the legislation? There is current legislation.
Yeah, the Senate and the Assembly have passed two different kinds of family leave.
But is this the kind of bill that comes up every year and always goes nowhere?
It's come up a few times before, hasn't it, Larry? And isn't there a cost to business? I mean, the business community, I believe, opposes it, correct? As a mandate again?
Okay.
Well, there's administrative costs, but my understanding of the way the legislation was passed by the Assembly is that it is a fairly
kind of
automatic deduction that covers most of the cost. And it's true, business is not in favor of it, although if you look at surveys in California, which has had the paid family leave insurance for the longest time, most businesses report no ill effects, mm-hmm. and in fact, a lot of favorable effects of productivity increases and reductions in absences and longevity of employees. So HR costs can actually go down.
Christine says, yes, 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 we should be embarrassed. This is about time. And then some other comments. It's at Evan Dawson on Twitter. Laura writes to us and says, a third of my pay used to go for child care. A husband in the manufacturing side was the only one with a stable employment, so no option to stay home. Mm-hmm. Joanna says, we decided that my husband stay home with our sons. The cost isn't worth it. It means a lot of sacrifices, but the kids benefit. Mm-hmm. And Joanna's point, by the way, when you've heard Catherine Smith talking about the way the family has changed. Yeah, in 1950, you probably wouldn't have Joanna saying, yeah, my husband chooses to stay home. And that's just sort of accepting modernity, right, Catherine? Eric writes to us, I work nights, my wife works days, I make significantly less than her, but add in the savings of no daycare and our pay ends up being similar. Caleb says we're a two-career household. We spend a lot on childcare, and it isn't economically logical to do this, but we take our lumps. Mm-hmm. So, you know, those are just examples of families who probably most of those are not even low-income families struggling with it. So I wonder how big that category is, Erica, that we can focus, and we should, obviously, on low-income families, families in poverty, single parents, all of those categories. But there's probably a large group of people paying for childcare and daycare who wouldn't be in that category but are just barely getting by in many ways.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I haven't run the numbers on that, but obviously, you know, it doesn't take much to get a flurry of emails and, you know, replies on Twitter to describing this problem. I guess the other thing I just wanted to point out, it relates to something we were talking about earlier about stress levels. And there have been a number of different kinds of studies that have really shown that stress has a major impact on parenting, and the higher your stress level is as a parent, really the harder it is to do a good job of parenting. And when you are faced with financial stress, I think in some ways that's the worst kind of stress, you know, really wondering if you're going to be able to provide for your children. And so we have at CGR, we did some research on anti-poverty initiatives programs as part of the, you know, local initiative, which you're going to be talking about more in the next hour, I know. And one of the studies that we found, you know, talked about that there was really kind of a tremendously positive impact just giving poor families cash. And that's something that obviously, you know, kind of sends people spinning in some ways on different parts of the political spectrum. But just giving them money, not telling them what to do with it, not prescribing the services, but just kind of removing that layer of financial stress, that it really allowed parents to be better parents. And there was significant improvement in child outcomes.
Was it $100?
No, it was a lot more than that.
Oh, what did I recently?
$6,000 a year.
I thought I was looking at something
you probably
weekly.
Something. Yeah.
Like $100 a week or something like that.
That could be.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what form? When you say cash, are we talking cash, a check?
This was a study of a Native American tribe, and it was casino profits that were distributed to everybody that was in the tribe. And there was some longitudinal studies of kind of the mental health of the children, I think, was the main focus. Mm-hmm. But it also found a lot of good, very positive impacts related to educational outcomes. So all that is just to say that, you know, I think we sometimes like to be very critical of groups of parents, and that we were not necessarily cognizant of the level of financial stress and how that can impact what people are trying to do as parents.
Here's an email from Jacqueline. She says, thank you so much for this conversation. Please have it once a month until something changes. she says, I recently moved from Canada and couldn't believe the difference here. Yeah. Why do Americans tolerate this? That's Jacqueline. And I would love, Jacqueline, if you're listening, I'd love to know more about the difference that you talk about, because I am certainly not an expert on comparing our child care subsidy to other states, other countries, et cetera. But anyone want to weigh in on that country to country? I mean, is it apples and oranges, Larry?
Well, there's just so many more family supports in more advanced industrialized countries than the United States. And notice I say more advanced countries than the United States, which is I'm a proud American, hard to say. But if you look at where kids are really excelling in the world, places like Finland and where kids are doing better educationally and health outcomes, et cetera, it's all because of a large emphasis on early child care, from family-friendly workplaces to supporting the pre-K, supporting universal early child care, and paying the professionals who do the hardest care and education a really decent wage. Those are all the ingredients that help children succeed, and we're different. We need to step up our game if children are going to do better.
Have you heard anybody else, Erica, Catherine, have you heard other people look at our situation and compare it in that way?
All the time.
Yeah.
I'm a retired educator, and when we compare the system, the structure, how we've done it for 240 years to Denmark, to Germany, to countries in on the African continent, to countries in South America. And normally people don't look at that educationally, like they have something to show us. They do it differently. They do it very differently. And they do have something to show us, and we do need to be aware of those models that are out there. I was thinking when you were talking about just giving cash, mm-hmm. what that does for an adult who is responsible for a child. Can you imagine having the opportunity, because that $100 is in your hand on Friday, let's say, that maybe you could buy the fruit and the produce instead of the chips and the Coke? I mean, I think people don't understand that the chips and the Coke are bought sometimes for breakfast, because that's the convenient mark, because there's no big supermarket, that is what they're used to. But it's not that they wouldn't choose fruit and produce. They've just never had the opportunity to make that choice. And I'm giving one tiny little example. You want your kid on the soccer team. There are all kinds of leagues. Thousands of children in Mineral County play soccer. You can get them there through, the person next door taking his kid and willing to take your kid because you've got to go to work, but you can't afford the uniform. You're not going to put your child on the soccer team wearing, not wearing the uniform. They're children. It just goes on and on and on every single day. The choices that you don't get to make for your child, that someone in my situation, in my family, I was raised in a very large family. My parents had 8 children. But we got to make those choices. It's just a huge difference in how you're able to raise your children.
Let's try to get to a couple more comments that have come in online, and I lost the last one there. Oh, my goodness, what did I do? I'm going to read Brian's first. All right, Brian writes, I have no children by choice, but my wife and I would gladly pay more in taxes to help families. I missed the first half hour. How could we see more resources devoted to this? So, Brian, thanks for that email. If you missed first half hour, I think we did touch a little bit about where funding is and where we would like to go, but I'll direct this to Larry Marks, the executive director of the Children's Agenda. What's on your legislative priority, and what would you like to see change?
Well, we need to get consensus exactly mm-hmm. on what the right policy approach is. I can tell you what some other communities have done, and that's devote a penny sales tax increase to help cover shortages in child care subsidies. That could be huge for a county like Monroe, or even just the year-to-year increase in sales tax revenue, devoting just that differential, that marginal difference in year-to-year increased sales tax revenue to support child care could be huge. But clearly we need to do some long-term fixes, and clearly it's going to require the resolution of county and state together. And if we can get the federal government as well, that'll be terrific.
Catherine Smith, what would you like to see change now?
I think it's very interesting, the last one you just read. When I go to a lot of meetings about this, and I go to lots, I speak at county and state. You don't often hear a couple who have chosen not to have children who get up and say, I'm willing to pay the penny. If they would just come to a county, they don't need to listen to me that the League of Women Voters supports funding for child care. I mean, our policy is 20 years old. But if a group of adults who know the value of raising children to be productive members of our society when they're 16, 17, and 18, and you've had many programs, Evan, and you could have one a week on our dropout rates and what's going on in the public school system in this county. And it's not just the city.
Okay. one more comment from Lauren in Pittsford. Lauren writes, it's also worth pointing out that part of the costs of childcare is government regulation. One early stage study showed that you could reduce the cost of childcare by 20% by eliminating certain regulations, because such regulations have no bearing on quality of care. Government involvement both solves and causes problems. That's from Lauren. I don't know what she's referring to, but Erica, what do you think?
I have not seen that study either. I wouldn't discount it out of hand, though. I mean, obviously, we want there to be a certain level of regulation in childcare in order to make sure that things are kept safe. One of the other kind of interesting areas is childcare quality. There's a lot of states that mm-hmm. are far ahead of New York mm-hmm. in terms of trying to have a system in place that sort of rates and works on improving the quality of childcare. So I agree with the statement. The government can solve problems, and the government can create more problems. problem. So we do need to look at those things carefully.
Okay, about a minute left, and let me ask Amanda Gage, a parent with children in daycare at Generations Daycare. We've been talking about the resources out there and the quality of it. How's your experience been, and how's your children's experience been with that daycare?
With Generations in particular? Very well. I love Generations. I have a son that has special needs, and they're wonderful with him. They're wonderful with all the children. But with my son in particular, they really understand him. The reason I do have him in you know, a child care setting versus a in-home daycare is he needs more one-on-one, and they can provide that for him. My experience has been, you know, great.
Probably a comfort, at least, to hear that a family like yours that needed assistance is not only getting that assistance, but also happy with the quality of the care.
Right.
And that's important. So, Catherine Smith, you get the last 20 seconds here.
And that child, of course, with this wonderful mother and her partner and the other people that are helping raising her other two kids, will have a very different life than many children in those circumstances. And we pay for those children at age 1 and 2 that don't get what we need. You can't make it up if you don't do it when they're 1 and 2 and they get into a public school at age 5 and 6. We don't like to hear that. It's too late.
Catherine Smith, League of Women Voters, thank you so much for being here. Amanda, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Good luck to you and your family, and thank you so much. Erica Rosenberg, thanks for sharing the expertise of CGR with us this hour. Thank you.
My pleasure.
And Larry Knox from the Children's Agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Parents out there, we're continuing the discussion in many ways next hour. We're broadening to talk about new anti-poverty initiative. But if you're a parent dealing with these kinds of issues, let's continue that discussion after the NPR News at the top of the hour right here on Connections.